Hey, 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 everybody. This is BK back again with another special edition of BK's Bullets. I have my host from Comic Timing back on. Of course, he's on the Comic Timing feed, so hey, we can't give him no credit. This is Ian Levinstein. What's going on, Ian?
Huh?
Okay, so this is just going to be a solo podcast.
Well, I'm sorry, I was pulling a Brent.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah, that's fine. Hi, Brent.
Glad to see what comes around goes around. Yeah.
Uh-huh. What's going on?
Doing pretty good. So, did you see the Hulk this weekend?
No.
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 Oh, you saw it?
Not at all.
When did you see the Hulk at all?
Yeah, I saw it twice actually.
Twice? So when did you see it?
Well, the first time I saw it, for anybody who goes to the Comic Timing site and actually reads when I post things, they would know that I went to see it about a week before it came out in theaters. It was actually on the Thursday before it came out, so I guess that was 2 weeks ago from tomorrow when we're recording this, because this one is actually going to come out the day that we're recording it, hopefully, you know, if Brent gets off his ass. But yeah, I went to see it then. And left a Yankee game early that I was with Raf, so that was fun. And, of course, the minute I leave, they come back from behind and win, but, I can't win them all. So
what does it say about you, then?
I don't know. Apparently, I'm bad luck. So I got online around 5 o'clock to get into the place, and then Chris comes along, and we both go see the movie. And what do they do when we come on in? They confiscate all cell phones, whether or not you're having a camera phone or a regular cell phone. All cell phones were confiscated, including not just cell phones, all electronic devices. So MP3 players, gone. They didn't want anything leaked about this movie.
Yeah, see, I remember you told us about that in the forum post, mm-hmm. But then you said Chris had her iPod, and I was kind of like,
No. That's not what I was said. That's not what I said. I said, Chris doesn't even have an iPod, so you must have read that wrong.
Oh.
No, I had the only thing I was able to bring in was my wristwatch. Which technically is an electronic device.
Oh.
So of course I was going to go in there and, like, you know, hold my my wrist the right way the whole time to make it look like I was video recording it with my wrist. But at the second.
No, but I thought you said you guys were sitting there in the theater for like an hour.
Yeah, we were.
Waiting for it to start.
Mm-hmm.
And she had her iPod or some musical listening device.
Nope.
No?
Nothing whatsoever. The only excitement we had were the people next to us who were actually talkative.
Okay, well, I'm fucking high. I don't know what the hell I read.
I don't know. Yeah, no. The only thing I had with me was my Zen and my cell phone, which I transferred over to a non-camera phone just to go into the damn thing. And that got confiscated as well. So my Zen got confiscated and that, and we sat there for an hour doing absolutely nothing because there was nothing to do. And then I went to see it, and it was really, really fun. And the same cut that I saw in the theaters that I paid for was the cut I saw in theaters for the preview, so they made no changes whatsoever in a week.
Okay. So, overall impressions of the film, what did you think?
I thought it was great. I thought that it was not quite as good as Iron Man, but a hell of a lot better than the first Hulk movie. I mean, this one was leaps and bounds ahead of that, because unlike the first one that was all, this is a monster, this one was about the man, and that was more important. And plus, they actually gave Hulk a personality, as opposed to this, you know, 12-foot-tall Godzilla-type thing that was in the first one.
Yeah, I liked how they had, like, things where I thought he said, leave me alone, and then he talked at the end. It was nice that he didn't talk the whole movie, the Hulk, but I do agree with you that this is more about Bruce Banner rather than just the Hulk or the monster-type thing.
Right, and plus also the Hulk appearance they had in this one looked a little bit less like Gumby.
It's a bit of a darker green, and I really like that. It was less the comic book green and more like a puke green.
Right.
You know, more of a natural, earthy green, I thought.
Less split-pea soup and more grass.
Yeah.
And actually, if you go on io9.com, they had an article today with some of the preliminary versions of the Hulk. And actually, they were originally going to go for something that was a bit more Frankensteinish, that was a little more human-looking, and actually had a bit more gray tone to it. So it would have looked a little bit more like the Gray Hulk, but they decided against it at the end. And I think it was a good call, because I think the version they went with was actually pretty good.
Well, yeah, I remember seeing the statue that they had going around the conventions, and that was a little gray. I thought, I don't know, but it was good.
Yeah, well, like all CGI, it went through a lot of changes. In fact, even if you look at like the Super Bowl promo versus the one that was actually released, the big scene where Hulk, you know, lands and all that, and the big fight between Abomination and him, there was, you know, like leftovers of a shirt on him in the final version, and none of that was there in the Super Bowl version. And plus, there was a lot more detail put in afterwards, like more vein detail and more hair detail, so that he looked less like a video game character.
He did. The CGI wasn't as good as the stuff in Iron Man. This is my only thing.
Yeah, no, I'll give it that. In fact, there actually were moments, especially in the New York scene, right in the middle of the Abomination fight, where I thought I was watching Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the movie. I'm serious, though, because all of New York was rendered. Like, that, they didn't just go with the Hulk. I could tell that the buildings were rendered as well, because it was apparent. I mean, it was good CGI, don't get me wrong. It's just that I could tell which parts were CGI and which ones weren't.
Yeah, I wasn't really looking for that stuff, not being a native New Yorker. I was more looking at the Hulk and the Abomination. Speaking right. of which, what do you think of the Abomination and his, you know, transfer to from paper to screen?
Well, it was certainly different than Finhead, I'll give you that. And it was a good call, I guess, because this one actually looks – this is a type of person you could actually call Abomination as opposed to Fishman, which is what yeah. which is what he is in the comics. I mean, sure, it's perfectly fine for the comic books, but had you have put that on screen, you got to admit that would have looked ridiculous.
And I think it worked well with the whole plotline of how he became the Abomination with the super soldier. Okay, this is going to be spoiler-filled, by the way. We'll just add that in later. But with the super soldier injections into his spine and all that stuff, it made sense that he was like this bony-looking, almost doomsday-like character.
Right, right. And
which kind of makes me worried for the Superman films. If they ever decide to use him, they're going to go, oh, the Abomination already used that. Well, the bone thing.
Well,
they can still use it very well, you know.
I doubt they'll ever use that for the movies, though, because, well, after all, I mean, you know, you get lucky enough to have Doomsday in the television show right now. How about that? Yeah, he's going to be a bartender.
Yeah, fucking great. God, I hope that doesn't work out.
Yeah, but and the acting also in this one was, I think, a little bit leaps and bounds ahead of the first one as well, because Abomination, both when he was in human form and in actual Abomination form, great acting from Roth.
Yeah, I loved Emil Blonsky. Just the character, like, I want another crack at him. He was just, he wasn't very evil until he got the taste of the super soldier serum. Mm-hmm. I think up until then, he was just like a motivated, driven soldier. But once he got there, just like the turn, I thought was really cool.
Yeah, and the super soldier serum, too, was a nice touch. I mean, it didn't need to be there. But to get the whole idea of a movie universe, they encoded it.
Yeah, I liked how it was something that people would know what it was if they knew what to look for. And yet at the same time, it was kind of this, you know, MacGuffin, oh, this is something from the government's days, whenever it was, you know. And it wasn't unless you realize what it, you know, what they were talking about, unless you know what the super soldier term means in the Marvel Universe, that you knew what it was.
Right, yeah. And for the super soldier in general here, this is going to, I guess, bring major ramifications for the next couple of movies because, well, the serum's there, and it's been there for years, apparently. So is Captain America already around, and do we not know it? Or is it going to be something a bit more of a surprise? Because there was a scene that was cut from here that apparently had him in it, that had Captain America in it, and I'm not sure why it was cut, but plus I'm not even sure if it even existed, because there have been some rumors online that are stating that, maybe this was all just like a whole like psych thing going on, where they were supposed to psych you up for the movie and to get you in the theaters, to say, hey, you know, Captain America might be in the movie, wink, wink, and when in reality all we get is a super soldier serum.
Yeah, I was kind of miffed at that because you had told me you saw the movie like 2 weeks beforehand, and then right after you wrote your little piece on the forum and in the website, there's all this talk about Captain America's in the movie, Captain America's in the film, and I didn't really want to read those because I wanted to be surprised, but right. I read that there's some scene where he was in the Arctic, presumably when he's going to Canada at the end of the movie, I guess, mm-hmm. and he comes across ice, and I'm guessing he saw Cap. Or Cap Shield? I mean, I don't know.
Well, what –
nobody knows for certain. But what was weird is that it wasn't in the cut you saw and it wasn't in the cut the whole public saw. Mm-hmm. So why they bother to hype it? Why didn't they say Cap cut from film or something like that?
The director, I believe, thought it was still in it at first. And the way that he described the scene afterwards when they finally actually went back to him to ask him about it, He said that it was a scene where the Hulk, and this couldn't have been from the end of the movie, because the way they described it is that the Hulk goes into the Arctic, Bruce Banner goes in the Arctic to try and kill himself, and he turns into the Hulk when trying to do so. He had just given up at this point, and gets attacked by, I believe they said, some sort of, either like, if not an abominable snowman, and just like a polar bear or something like that. And then you were going to see Cap. Now, whether or not he was going to be in the ice, or whether or not it was going to be Captain America himself, we don't know. But this is one of the many scenes that was cut from the movie. In the eyes of the director, he said the reason that this particular scene was cut was because it was way too dark for the movie. And I don't know if you heard this, but there were 70 minutes of the film that were cut from the version that made it into theaters, that they're saying most of which is going to end up on DVD.
That would be great. I'd love a dark Hulk film. Like, that scene sounds really cool. It sounds like, did you ever read Startling Stories Banner?
I did, yeah.
By Brian Azzarello and Richard Corbin?
Yeah.
That's kind of like what that is. He's trying to kill himself, and he just can't do it.
Right. And actually, well, in the movie itself, talk about things that, that you know, harken back to other comic books, Hulk comic books. The entire movie was basically Bruce Jones' run.
Yeah, Mr. Blue, Mr. Green. I got really excited when that was.
Right.
And, when that came up.
And obviously, you know, they're hyping up that you'll probably end up with the leader in the next movie, which, you know, sort of makes sense with what happens to this certain Mr. Blue at the end of the movie. But we'll talk about that a little later on.
But, so what about – let's go back to the cast and stuff. What did you think of Ed Norton and Liv Tyler, our two main principal characters?
Ed Norton was perfect for the role. In Fight Club, he basically played Bruce Banner. You know, a guy who was very mild-mannered and then, in essence, hulked out. I'm not going to give away spoilers for Fight Club. I know that it's, like, forever old now, but the twist in the movie, it's very similar to the sort of thing that you have in the Hulk. So I thought he was going to be perfect for Bruce Banner. And he was. In essence, he was everything I was expecting. He was very calm and collected, and yet you could see the streak of a man that was just about to lose it. And whenever he was close to hulking out, you saw it in his emotions, you saw it in his face, you saw it in his features, so it just worked perfectly. Liv Tyler as Betty Ross, I was a little antsy going into it. I wasn't quite sure if she was going to be perfect for the role. In fact, the previous Betty Ross, I think, did an exceptional job as well, Jennifer Connelly, but Liv Tyler nailed it. I mean, she was, I guess, the best Betty for the Bruce. She was along the same lines of Bruce, a very calm, collected person, but I think she actually nailed it the most for me in the scene in New York in that cab where she's absolutely freaking out.
And she yelling, hulks out.
Right. She hulks out, and then Bruce Banner just turns to her and goes, you know, I could give you some techniques to manage that anger.
Some breathing techniques. That was great. Yeah.
Right. And it worked very well. And also the scenes in the pizzeria were really cool.
For me, like, the scene that sold me on Ed Norton as Bruce Banner was just when – after he had hulked out for the first time in like 100 days. And I love that counter where it's like, you know, days since last incident, you know, yeah. 137 or something like that. That was just really cool just to see how far he'd come for himself. And then he hulks out in Brazil or Argentina, wherever he is. Brazil, yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you see him next time and he's like begging on the street for food and clothing. And he's just terrible. Feels like crap, you know.
Right.
He probably feels like he let himself down. He's been working so hard to control this thing inside of him, and then it finally got loose and did him in.
And
ruined his life, basically.
And for the Brazil thing, I'm trying to rank up here where the Stan Lee appearance ranks for me in Stan Lee appearances. I think it's maybe number two, because Stan Lee in this movie actually is, in essence, a plot point, because if not for Stan Lee in this movie, they would have never found Bruce Banner in the first place in Brazil.
I wanted to see something happen to Stan Lee, like, you know, his finger grow or something like that, just to give us a little idea of maybe he was hulking out too. I won't give it away what it is because it's a really cool thing. But
yeah.
I will say that this one and the one in Iron Man where he's mistaken as Hugh Hefner is kind of cool.
Fantastic Four 2 was good too.
Yeah, I do like the one where he's like, I'm on the list, kind of like the comic book, but
right.
As the mailman in the first one, kind of. Yeah, it's all right, you know.
Yeah, but in the second one, it's great because that's in essence calling back directly to the comic book where the wedding happens.
Yeah,
yeah. But back to Hulk.
Yeah, but Liv Tyler for me, I like her. Just the only thing that I hate with her is that she has such a quiet voice all the time.
Right.
And it just seems like, you know, they need to just dial up her dialogue every so often, because she gets into that mode and she starts whispering and stuff. And it's like, you know, you're fucking Steven Tyler's daughter, big old lips and a huge ass voice. Mm-hmm. And you're going to whisper on screen. It's just kind of like, come on, you know.
It's her acting style, though. I mean, it's hard to break that.
I guess it is. It's a little subdued. It did work, but it was kind of too similar to Jennifer Connelly. Jennifer Connelly a lot of times has that same – she has that same demeanor, that same little mousy voice. So it's kind of similar to me.
So wait. So you'd rather it not be similar to Jennifer Connelly? Because I thought in the first one – and mind you, I've never seen the first one all the way through. I'll admit that, because I just couldn't watch it all the way through. It just was not working for me. But from what I did see of it, Connelly seemed to have the role down for me, and that's why I think I enjoy Liv Tyler's so much, because it was along the lines of the same Betty Ross.
Well, I like them both, but I can't say that either one was better for me, because I haven't read Betty Ross in a whole bunch of comics.
Okay.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So as a girl, a friend or whatever of the hero, they're both good.
Yeah.
So I'll just say that.
She wasn't just a damsel in distress in this movie, which is something I wanted to say.
No, and well, the fact that they made her into the scientist, and let's get into the reboot part of this. It was a reboot, and it kind of wasn't. What did you think of the new reboot, where it's like chemical cancer radiation stuff?
Okay, well, the best way to describe this is I'm sitting there in the theater the first time I saw it, and the credits come up, and, you know, they do the whole Marvel thing, and then they go into the opening credits, and about 50 seconds into those opening credits, Chris turns to me and goes, "It's already better than the first one." and yeah, they totally retconned the first movie in the first 3 minutes of the film by giving that brand new origin, and it worked. You know, you almost forgot the first film happened by the time you were into the main movie, because you were given that opening origin, and this origin works for me. The whole radiation thing and for the government, because it feels more of a ultimate style origin, which is more along the lines of what you got in Iron Man as well.
Well, I think it makes him more of a scientist. Like, even the thing with the first film was, it was all like, I don't know whether, like, his dad was playing with him apparently and messing with his genetics.
Don't even get me started on the whole thing.
And there was
the first one.
Gamma bomb or something like that, and gamma radiation exposure. It was just too much to figure out what the hell made him the Hulk.
Yeah. No Rick Jones,
this
though,
one,
that was sad.
Yeah, in neither of these films. This one, though, what I did like was that it, like, this science angle makes him more of a scientist. And to me, him analyzing his own DNA as building a gamma bomb is kind of a far stretch. You know, from studying aerospace engineering, I don't shit about genetics. Mm-hmm. I might could build a rocket engine, but me knowing genetics is a far cry from what I'm doing. So, you know, a guy who works on a bomb, then figuring out his own genetic code and stuff – that'd take him just as long to learn as to how to build that bomb. So him working on the cancer stuff kind of makes it seem like, okay, he knows about cellular regrowth and regeneration and all this other stuff that they're trying to work out. So he's almost like a doctor. Well, he is a doctor, but, you know, like a medical doctor that would know these kind of things.
Right, right, yeah. And that's more along the lines of his character, that he's, not just PhD, but actually knows stuff about medical. You know, like medical backgrounds. I mean, as opposed to just being outside and having a bomb explode, this one just works more for the screen, I think.
Well, and they didn't spend, you know, the first 30 minutes on it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And for the Hulk, to me, like, he doesn't need a 30-minute origin, you know?
Right.
Like, this worked great, I thought.
Well, and plus, memory serves me right here. Didn't the first movie end off with him in Brazil? So, in essence, didn't we just get back to where the first movie was? So
yeah. It did, actually, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, that's in the, like, I mean, that's the way it was. I mean, by retconning that first movie and yet still leaving him where he was, you were able to give the origin in 3 minutes and move on.
Well, and I think starting it in Brazil is just kind of a way of a leaping off from the last movie and then giving us something we haven't seen before.
Right.
You know, because we've seen people in Africa and the Bourne movies and stuff. In Brazil, like and this wasn't Rio de Janeiro or anything like that, mm-hmm. or Brazil City. This was like some smaller city in Brazil where he wouldn't get much attention at some little soda bottling plant. And when they pulled back from that hill of like the slums and the houses and stuff, mm-hmm. I just love that shot. I was like, wow, this is someplace we've never seen on film before. And to have an action piece there going across the rooftops. Yeah. Was kind of cool.
And it's a gorgeous place, even though in many ways the slum, because in essence it's, you know, they built things as cheap as possible there. The entire neighborhood is built from the ground up by whatever supplies they could get, and yet it's such a gorgeous surroundings just because of the way that they built up the mountain like that to make an entire neighborhood. So I was very happy with that. And also, how about those Jackie Chan style chase scenes with the roof?
That was pretty cool. It reminded me – it was like – it wasn't so much parkour as it was, I don't know, normal – something a normal person could do. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, Bruce Banner, we've seen him like train using these breathing techniques and martial arts and stuff to control his anger. So it did make sense that he'd be able to leap over this roof and that roof and, you know, kind of across this other thing. But it wasn't like what there's, you know, the shit that you see him doing on YouTube where they're like leaping from corner to corner, that kind of shit.
Right, yeah. If you want that sort of shit, Avatar The Last Airbender comes out in a couple of years.
Well, okay, what about William Hurt as Thunderbolt Ross? What did you think of him compared to Sam Elliott in their other one?
I love Sam Elliott. I hated him as General Ross. I thought he was totally wrong for the role. William Hurt, however, you take General Ross, you take him from the page, you turn him into a real person, and he is William Hurt. I mean, not only does he look like General Ross, he acts like General Ross, and that's why he was just perfect for the role.
To me, like the Sam Elliott thing, his accent is just too much. His southern drawl, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it came out when he was Thunderbolt Ross in the first movie. And that was kind of distracting.
Yeah, especially considering that Jennifer Connelly didn't have that southern drawl.
Exactly.
So, I mean, come on. You're supposed to be the father and the daughter. If she sounds like she's from Connecticut and you sound like you're from the South, that doesn't work.
Well, and what I liked about this was, though, you're right, he does look like General Ross. If you look at, like, the JRJR Hulk spread in World War Hulk where General Ross is there, that looks like William Hurt.
Yeah.
Or William Hurt looks like that.
Right, yeah.
Beautiful, like, synergy there.
Oh, no question, no question, yeah. And how about Samuel Stern's Tim Blake Nelson?
He was pretty good. I didn't know who he was when they said his name. Did you? Is that the leader's real name, Samuel Stearns?
It is indeed. That's his real name. In fact, the reason I actually remembered it was because it actually took me a minute because I'd forgotten who Mr. Blue was at first when I read Bruce Jones's run. And then I remembered, oh, yeah, because even in that, Mr. Blue is the leader.
It is? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so only difference is that at that point he was already the leader. In this one, he's just Samuel Stearns. But I remember that afterwards that was the case. And Samuel Stearns in this one, Tim Blake Nelson, excellent actor. I love his personality. I love his humor that he brought to the role. And he felt like the leader. I mean, in the way that you would describe the leader to somebody, he's this like egotistical maniac that – if you meet him on the street for the first time, seems like, you know, he could be the funnest, nicest guy you've ever met. But as you get to talk to him more and more, you know, there's something underneath that's kind of dangerous that you wouldn't want to be around.
And he wasn't like the leader when they met him.
Yeah.
You know, he was this fun guy. He was kind of like, oh, this is so cool. And I've never seen anyone with this levels of exposure. And then when it finally got down to it, the nitty gritty, Bruce found out that he had done like so many other experiments in a short span of time with his blood sample that he sent him earlier in the movie. And I loved the fact that Ed Norton just had this look of disgust on his face, like, what have you done? I thought he was going to Hulk out right then and there.
Yeah. And that's,
and destroy that.
And that's the way Samuel Stearns has always been played. That, you know, he might seem like he's doing something great for you until he takes out the diseased rats. You know?
Right.
And then you're like, oh, shit, I'm in the wrong room. I got to go, bye.
He wasn't really doing it for Bruce. He was doing it for himself. Mm-hmm. He was looking for medical recognition and, you know, fame and fortune and all that.
Yep. So you didn't know Doc Samson was in this?
I did. At least I had a hint.
Okay.
Like in the previews, they have that scene of Bruce talking to this psychiatrist or whatever, and he's like, "You need some help in your head or whatever." Mm-hmm. and they have the whole voiceover about there's something inside me and you don't want to make me angry. Whatever is like in the trailer is now.
Which was all cut out, yeah.
Right. So I was thinking, oh, that's got to be Doc Samson. And I don't know if I'd read it somewhere or something like that. But I was just waiting for that scene because I'd seen it so many times in the trailer. And then I get to the movie and they get to Doc Samson and he's there and he says a couple lines and then he's not there anymore. And then he runs out of the house and goes, Betty!
Right.
And then at the end of that, General Ross goes, thanks for calling us. And I'm like, so is that it? There's no fireside scene, you know? I mean,
Well, I'd be curious to see where that was going to work in and whether or not there was originally perhaps a different write-off for him, like whether or not he was originally going to join them at some point, you know, while they're running away or something like that. Because I cannot think of, for the life of me, where that scene would have fit in unless it's at the end of the movie.
And see, I could see it fitting in before he hulks out in the town.
Okay.
Like, you know, he's on the run or whatever, and he finds Betty. Mm-hmm. Betty finds him in the rain, and then I could see them going to his house or something like that.
Okay.
And so he's all wet, thus the lighting of the fire, and then him telling him about the Hulk, and then he calls, what's his name? General Ross.
Actually,
right?
All right. Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah, that's probably actually exactly where it falls, because I don't see
it. Because how else did he know who she was and where they were?
Mm-hmm.
If they'd never talked about it in the film,
right?
In the cut that we saw.
Yeah, it's a small little plot hole in there that obviously gets filled by that scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. But and they did actually have his name on a couple of papers in the movie, I remember specifically. And that's actually why I knew it was him. I mean, I knew from the coming attraction, like you, but actually seeing it in the film, I remember catching it on either a paper that Betty was holding or a paper that he was holding. That said specifically Dr. Samson, Dr. Leonard Samson.
But they never really said it outright, did they?
They never said it, no.
Yeah, that was kind of disappointing.
Yeah. And
I'm sure it's in that scene they cut out, though.
Oh, sure, yeah. And I want to see an extended cut. I certainly hope I don't have to wait till Hulk 2 to get an extended cut, because if you got 70 minutes on the floor, you know, you better give me something big.
At least put the deleted scenes on all the deleted scenes on the disc, you know, or at least the good ones worth mentioning, like this Captain America and this Doc Samson scene, are the ones that I could really see wanting to see, and anything else I might not give a shit about,
right?
You know, but those are the ones that you've teased me about. Those are the ones I want to see.
Well, and plus I've heard specifically the 70-minute thing they were talking about the Blu-ray release. I'm not sure if they were talking about the DVD release as well for that one. That might be a bit difficult for time purposes, but I know that obviously they're going to put some deleted scenes on the regular DVD version, and I certainly hope that they would give the same treatment for the DVD release as the Blu-ray one, but they said like 400 times, oh yeah, well, you know, the extra 70 minutes are definitely going to be on the Blu-ray release. I'm like, yeah, that's great. What about the DVD release?
Yeah, because not everybody's changed over.
Yeah, I haven't.
I haven't yet either.
Yeah, it's freaking money, damn it.
Exactly.
Yeah. So another thing that I wanted to point out, and for the life of me, I can't remember what the hell the name of the characters were, but the guys who took the camera phone pictures, the camera phone video of the Hulk.
Was one of them Ben Urich or something like that?
No, one of them wasn't Ben Urich, but it was another reporter that's associated with the Marvel Universe. Like Richard something, I think, if I remember correctly. I was looking for his credit here in the... you know, in the whole thing here, but I can't actually find it. So, but I know it was a specific, you know, guy that we should know in the Marvel Universe that's been in like Hulk stories and other stuff. If you can pass on the full name of the guy at some point before the DVD release, that would be super. But it is somebody that we know, so it was another Easter egg that they threw in there.
What about the S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff at the beginning? Like, I liked in this film that they mentioned S.H.I.E.L.D. in the script. General Ross mentioned it, you know, we're going through the S.H.I.E.L.D. files and stuff, and then it came up, you saw the big logo when, you know, the Mr. Blue email came up, and then also in the beginning, in the first 50 seconds, said S.H.I.E.L.D., and then Nick Fury files, you know?
Yeah.
That was really cool.
Yeah, and that's all part of the retcon that worked for me, because, in essence, they were retconning that first film into something that fit with this universe. Which is another added bonus. And S.H.I.E.L.D. was done, you know, even though we didn't see actual S.H.I.E.L.D. agents in this, we saw S.H.I.E.L.D. in action. And that's what I like to say.
Yep.
Even if there wasn't any Sam Jackson, we felt Nick Fury in this movie.
Can you think, like, for me, this upcoming Avengers movie, especially with the Iron Man cameo at the very end, mm-hmm. and, you know, I don't feel bad about giving that away because they already did that in the right. in the teasers for the movie. That was disappointing.
And actually, hold on. Before you mention that it was disappointing, hear me out here for a minute.
Well, it wasn't – the actual thing wasn't disappointing. I was just kind of like, oh, they put it in the teaser? Oh, God. You know?
And exactly. I'm going to explain it here right now why they did that. Number one, Iron Man was fucking huge for them.
Okay? Yeah.
So people that might not have even known that Hulk was going to be related to Iron Man because they don't, you know, go online or they don't do stuff like that are now going to know that these are connected. Just by that scene. Sure, it pissed off the mega fans that were waiting to see the full scene, but it might have brought in people that were not going to see the movie otherwise, knowing that, hey, this movie I really liked is going to be associated with this.
Mm-hmm. Even if in some small bit way.
Right. Mm-hmm. I was going to say, they also gave away Hulk Smash, you know, because that was one of the few lines he spoke in the movie, and in one of the TV trailers I saw, you know, they have the whole Hulk Smash right in there.
I don't know if I saw that one, so that was kind of a surprise for me.
Okay.
But what I can see them kind of going right now is we have the Hulk, mm-hmm. right? And we have Thunderbolt Ross wanting to get the Hulk. Mm-hmm. Then you have Iron Man approaching him. You have a problem. So I can see kind of this, you know, Ultimates 1 kind of storyline for this Avengers movie.
Right.
Would you like that?
I'm not quite sure if that's the route they're going to go, though. I think we'll know for certain once we get to, you know, the actual movie itself, whether or not we're going to see Hulk on the side of the Angels or on the side of people they're trying to catch. I think it's going to be on the side of the Angels. I think that the Avengers team is probably going to be something along the lines of Iron Man, Thor, Captain America, Hulk, and Ant-Man. They'll probably throw Ant-Man in there because the Ant-Man movie is still coming.
Right.
And that's
which
under
the
Marvel.
The weirdest
umbrella.
Movie ever to make.
Dude, come on. You've got Simon Pegg involved with it?
I will like that. If it's anything like Irredeemable Ant-Man, I will like it.
Yes, and that's what I'm hoping for. And that one in particular, that movie, once it's made, is apparently going to have all three Ant-Men in it. So that'll be fun. Yeah, and maybe even a Hawkeye or something like that you could throw in there. Or, hell, even a Power Man, a Luke Cage, because I know they were trying to make that movie for a while. But you got so many options thrown in here that you could do. You could go the route of Ultimates and have Hulk be the villain, but from the way they actually have portrayed Bruce Banner and Hulk in this, I don't see it happening because already by the end of this movie, you see a different Bruce Banner than you do at the beginning.
Yeah, what do you think that meant? Because I didn't know what to make of that.
I thought exactly what I felt in Bruce Jones' run. He's learning to control the Hulk.
So he's learning when he can Hulk out or mm-hmm. what he's doing when he's the Hulk? Because it kind of – actually – what I liked about this is that they kind of discussed what he feels like when he's the Hulk. He's like, you know, I remember things in flashbacks, but he can't really control it yet.
Right. Right. Well, I think he's getting there, and that was part of the hulking out. I think that through the meditation and through actually wanting to Hulk out, he is going to gain more and more control of the Hulk, whether it be in personality-wise or whether it be in actions. You're going to start seeing that, which is why I think, again, Hulk is going to be on the side of the Angels and it's not going to be an Ultimates thing.
It's going to be a Professor Hulk where he talks all the time?
I don't think it's going to be that. No. Although, and you know, totally off topic from the movie, but one of my favorite moments in Paul Jenkins' run is when they reveal that Professor Hulk wasn't even Bruce Banner in the first place. It was just another Hulk persona. Because, and best explanation ever, you know Bruce Banner is right-handed, right? Professor Hulk is left-handed. There is like, oh shit, how have we never noticed before?
Because nobody pays attention to what hand a comic book character picks up a pen with.
I know, but it was so great because, you know, that was just the best way to explain it away. Nah, he was never joined in the first place. He's just another one of the many personas of the Hulk / Bruce Banner. Next one's going to be Hulk Hogan.
See, that's something I don't want them to get into with the Hulk persona thing in the movies. I just want to see Hulk smashing stuff and, you know, the dichotomy between – you know, I want to see the whole Jekyll and Hyde thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we got more of that in this movie than we did the first
one. What, no Mr. Fix-It for you?
And nah. And we didn't have any Hulk dogs either.
Yes,
thank
you. And
Nick Nolte didn't help, you know, helped a lot of things.
Okay, I like Nick Nolte as a person. just not as an actor a lot of the times. I like him in certain things. The Hulk wasn't for him. So just walk away, just like he did, and never will he be mentioned again because that entire Ang Lee fiasco is swept under the rug by this one movie.
That and the moving comic book panels on the screen, that messed me up, that first movie.
Actually, well, and friends
of mine, I know you like those, but,
no,
you know.
No, I didn't.
I thought you did. No, we talked about this on a comic time before, and I thought you said you liked them.
Okay. I did until something important was brought up to me by friends of mine and by other people I know, that there's one scene, and this totally blew it for me. I was liking it up until this was pointed out to me, and I didn't even notice it the first time around, is that there's one scene where there's three helicopters flying in the sky.
That's what the scene I couldn't fucking stand.
Yeah, and it makes it look like there's seven helicopters.
Yeah, and there's really only three.
Yeah, and I didn't even notice that the first time. So, yeah, now I'm on your camp.
Well, no, but what I hated was the split-screen thing where you're trying to watch the helicopters fly towards the Hulk, and then they went to General Ross, Sam Elliott, and they go back to the helicopters. It's like, what the fuck am I supposed to be watching here?
The Ultimate Spider-Man game got it right. The Hulk movie didn't.
Well, yeah, because when Ultimate Spider-Man game did that panel stopped, and they went to a different one.
Yeah, yeah. That's all they needed to do. But no, Ang Lee, Mr. Ooh, look at me. I'm Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. I can do whatever the hell I want. You know,
no, I think he was just trying to make the comic book film truly comic book with the panels and stuff.
And guess what? Sin City did it. And he should.
No.
It sure as hell didn't need any comic panels.
No, Sin City did it, yes. But, I mean, like, Ang Lee took it to be like, oh, we need panels or something
in
the film.
Yes, and he was wrong. He was fucking wrong.
I know he was wrong. I've been saying it all along. You're the one who said you liked it to begin with.
I know. Until people pointed me towards the light, as usual. I have one opinion that I'm proved wrong, and I can safely say I was wrong.
Okay, so what about the story? We had all these rumors of, you know, Ed Norton writing the script. And when I first heard that, I was kind of like, I don't know.
There weren't rumors.
It's kind of scary here.
There weren't rumors.
I mean, I know he did write them, but when you first heard about it, I was kind of struck like, is this going to be good or bad for the film? What'd you think?
I thought it was great for the film because obviously his input, I think, actually helped it out a lot because he seems to be a knowledgeable person. He seems to be somebody who actually researched the Hulk a little bit. But my problem with it is that he did not get a screenwriter credit. And that was because of the Screen Actors Guild or something along those lines, or one of those bigwig guilds or unions or whatever the hell it is. I don't even know which one it is anymore, but didn't give him the credit because it was up to them, and his name wasn't on it. And because he couldn't get final say in the editing, he didn't do the full press junket either. Now that's a bit childish, okay? Because it's one thing to do a screenplay, but to beg and plead that you're going to get like final editing say. Also, it's not just his movie.
Yeah, he's not the director. The writer never gets an editing say. I thought, right?
Almost never.
Yeah.
Unless the writer also happens to be the. You know, the main character in the film, and then he gets some street cred. I mean, obviously, if Kevin Smith, you know, wants something, if he, let's give you an example here. Yeah, if Kevin Smith were to write a movie and be in the movie, but not direct the movie, don't you think he'd get a little bit of say?
Well, he's a known director, so yeah. Maybe.
Yes, but
I don't think he would do that, though. Ed Norton seems like the kind of guy who might.
Ed Norton, didn't he help out in Fight Club?
I don't know.
I'm almost certain, if not that, one of the other movies he was on, he also assisted with the editing. And, you know, he felt that he needed to do that here. And obviously he didn't, because the final product we got without him involved was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I was okay with him writing some stuff, because obviously that might have helped out his character a little bit.
Well, we can't really say, like, whether his input helped or not, because we didn't know what it was beforehand.
Right.
But what we did get was Ed Norton helped, and we got a good Hulk movie. Mm-hmm. So we can say, thanks, Ed Norton, for helping.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Thank you very much, Ed Norton. I will see you in Hulk 2 and possibly Avengers. But next time around, don't try to get more than you deserve.
I hope he's in Avengers. I want to see him.
No, he sure as hell is going to be.
I want to see all these big stars in Avengers movie. That'd be great.
Avengers movie is going to be great, and DC's going to be crying in the corner going, we could have had a good Justice League movie. We could have had a good one, but we fucked it up.
No, we could have had a good Superman movie to start it off. But
isn't it great that now Raph even admits the first one was crap?
Oh, yes. That's so great.
It's like the guy who went to see it 10 times finally admits that there was bullshit. And I'm just
Yeah, it took him 10 times to realize it.
Yeah, man. Hey, I liked it. It just wasn't the type of movie you needed to start it off. But that's another story for another time. But yeah, you know what? We can say the same thing about the first Hulk movie. It wasn't the start of it off, and The Incredible Hulk righted that.
Okay, so what about the director, Louis Leterrier, right, or some? I don't know if I'm saying that right.
Louis Leterrier, I believe.
Leterrier, okay. He did the Transporter 1 and 2, most notably. What'd you think of this?
He can certainly do action, as was proven in the Transporter. And in this, I believe the fight scenes were incredibly well choreographed. Even the ones that were CG, obviously he had a directorial decisions to make in that as well. That worked out incredibly well. My favorite scenes in the movie were the action scenes when it comes to directing, mostly because you never had to question where people were or the Hulk. You know, like you never had to think like, oh, I guess he's off screen here. Everything worked out beautifully. And with Terrier, if he's going to do another comic book film other than Hulk, I'll be right there for it, knowing that I'm pretty much going to get a good movie. Because he proved a lot to me this time.
Well, I loved the first Transporter and the second one just as well. But I think, to me, this film proved that he could do drama.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know if that was the actors and the material, too. But, you know, the director helps, no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Hey, well, now we've had two movies in a row. Jon Favreau and Louis Leterrier. Leterrier, however the hell you pronounce it. It's like Perez right now. But
it's French, whatever.
Yeah. But, two directors that aren't necessarily known for their specific craft. Jon Favreau, not really known that much for action. Leterrier, not really known that much for drama. And both of which churn out movies that are perfectly balanced in both.
Well, and Chris Nolan, you know, Batman Begins, not known for action.
Right.
Had some action, good action in there, and I think we're going to get even more of it in the summer.
No, of course we are. Of course we are. But
fuck yeah.
And actually, one of the things I picked up the second time I saw The Incredible Hulk, I'm not sure if you're going to agree with this, you've only seen it once, but the second time I saw it, I picked up on the humor a lot more. It was funnier to me the second time I saw it, Incredible Hulk.
The excitement line, I thought was funny. I picked up on that. What else are you talking about?
I don't know. Like a lot of lines didn't come off as funny to me the first time, and I was cracking up at them this time. I mean, the first time around, obviously, I was cracking up at "Don't make me hungry. You won't like me when I'm hungry."
That was hilarious. Yeah.
And then he's like, "No, that's not right." But again, some other throwaway lines. Even the stuff with Samuel Stearns was funnier to me the second time around, because I guess I was focusing more on, is this movie going to be good the first time? And the second time, I was able to just focus on the movie itself.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that was it.
I don't know. I thought it was funny the first go around.
Yeah.
At least the stuff that was supposed to be funny was.
Right, right. Now, there weren't any Hulk dogs that made you crack up hysterically. What the hell was that?
Yeah, exactly.
Let's see. Was there anything else worth discussing in this? Like any other cameos or guest stars that we're not thinking of?
Lou Ferrigno, can't forget about him.
Mm-hmm.
The convention staple.
And oh god, yeah, yeah. $40. He'll be charging $80 now for his freaking
Yeah, really. Now we'll never get rid of him.
But hey, the voice of the Incredible Hulk, Lou Ferrigno.
Two lines. Yeah. Leave me alone.
No. Three lines.
Leave me alone, Hulk smash, and...
No.
Betty. He did say that?
Yeah, come on, dude. Where were you?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, at the end of the movie. He goes up to Betty, you know, he touches the tear coming down her cheek, and then he's all, Betty.
I honestly don't remember that.
Wow. Maybe we saw two different movies. Maybe I saw the first one by accident. I don't know. But, Yeah, no, that was definitely in there. I remember that very well. And of course, security guard who likes pizza.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, and there was actually one other appearance that I was kind of amused by. And hold on, let me see if I can get that. Yeah, Michael K. Williams from The Wire.
The black guy in the yellow T-shirt. I was like, I've seen him before, but I don't know where from.
Yeah, he played...
Just runs out somewhere.
Yeah, his exact credit was Harlem Bystander. And people are saying he might have been very well playing his role from The Wire, and that one just snuck that in there. But that was kind of fun.
So overall, good film?
Overall, great film. I'm expecting... you know what? It raised the bar. It proved that Iron Man wasn't a fluke. Because when I first saw the trailer for Hulk the first time around, I wasn't expecting much. I mean, at that point, the special effects weren't polished yet, and I still wasn't quite sold on any of the actors. But now I'm certainly sold on Hulk, and I would see it multiple times if I could. And I did. So there, ha. But I'm going to see it on DVD also, and Marvel's going to have to keep the ball up here. They can't drop it at all. Thor better be a good fucking movie, because that's the next one coming out, probably. And I'm not quite sure what to expect from a Thor movie. Are we going to get the Ultimates version? Are we going to get the regular version? Are we going to get Donald Blake? Are we just going to get Norse gods? I don't know, but better be good.
I thought that it did prove, you're right, it did prove that Iron Man wasn't a fluke. Mm-hmm. But what was interesting to me, though, is that they really didn't like promote this movie ahead of time. Because I thought, you know, we got the Iron Man trailers. We got two of them before we even saw the first Hulk trailer.
Right.
I thought that was really interesting. They really were afraid of this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean,
I don't know why. Well, it was good.
From the reaction from the first movie, even though it made a significant amount of money for them, no one liked it. And they were petrified that people were going to see the Incredible Hulk trailer, get turned off by those early special effects, and not go and see it. And by having Iron Man come out first and, you know, getting the hype up for Iron Man and then delivering with Iron Man, people were going to go see another Marvel movie. And hey, guess what? A couple of weeks after Iron Man, Incredible Hulk comes out. And it did significantly better than anyone was expecting. And it's just going to keep on doing better.
Yeah, once Iron Man opened big, I think the floodgates for the Hulk stuff just let loose. Then you started seeing more and more TV spots and trailers in front of things. It's just kind of like, finally, you know, you're promoting this fucking movie.
Yeah, and I think it beat The Happening by, what, $12 million or $13 million? So that
I don't even know. I don't care about M. Night Shyamalan.
No. I don't care that much about M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dong, but I will care that, he's doing the Avatar movies. You know, The Last Airbender coming soon.
After Lady in the Water, I really don't care what he makes.
Hey. The Last Airbender is not going to have a twist. At least I can guarantee that. It's going to be a straightforward movie about Avatar The Last Airbender, my favorite cartoon series in the last 10 years. I can't wait.
Is that the one with the headband and the swirl on the forehead?
No, that's Naruto. Go screw yourself.
All right. I think that wraps us up for... BK's Bullets. Ian, what do we got on Comic Timing coming up?
I don't know.
You pulling a Brent again?
Yes, I'm pulling a Brent again. Come on, man. It's fun. Well, first off, considering that's part of the Comic Timing family, I guess I might as well plug Heroes Corner on this as well. Brought to you by HeroesCorner.com. Use the promo code CTSAVES this month, and you'll get an additional 5% off on your order. And make sure to get the first JR Jr. issue and the... Booster Gold 11 and Doctor Who the Forgotten number 1, and put Comic Timing special discount into the notes and get an additional 10% off on those. And their Juno thing this month, all titles with proud and powerful women in them are 46% off this month. Check it out at heroescorner.com. What's coming
and
up?
And let's not forget Mimes.
Oh, yes.
Friend of the show, Radio Wayne, and current GeekSpeak co-host contestant.
Yes, indeed, actually. And make sure to order Mimes. And if you order Mimes, you also get a free copy of another comic book. I don't have Heroes Corner open right now, but I think it's Family Values or something like that. But you do get extra value out of ordering Mimes number 1. You're going to get a free comic book with it, which is pretty damn cool. And what's coming up on Comic Timing? Well, a lot of stuff, actually. We've got 22 pages. That was recorded a while back. You had fun with that one, right?
Yeah, that was good. I love that episode.
Yeah, we got Chris Chavez and Sean Cummings on that one. And upcoming tomorrow, we're recording it, so it should be out either next week or the week after. We're going to have another Chris on. We're going to have Webhead Chris Gallo back on and talk some Brand New Day.
Yeah, we're going to do an overview, kind of like what Ian, John, and David did for 52.
Yeah, only this time, no John or David.
So it'll be half as bad. Half as good.
No. You should be happy. You should be happy that you're going to be part of the sort of style episodes that many people consider the best episode of Comic Timing.
But anytime David D and John Mayer are on, they always go, it's the best episode of Comic Timing ever. And I'm never on those except for episode 50.
Well, for all I know, at the last second, I'll IM John or PM John and be like, hey, John, you want to be on?
Just have him come in and go, hey, guys. Bye, guys.
Yeah, it'll immediately boost our ratings. But, it's going to be a lot of fun. And we got crossover coming up with Raging Bullets that's in the works for July and a whole bunch of other stuff that I'm not thinking of right now because I'm brain farting. But we got a bunch of good shit coming on Comic Timing. So make sure to listen to it. And you probably are since this is the Comic Timing feed.
Exactly. I also want to say, Ian, let's do some more of these, summer movie reviews. Just 20 minutes, 30 minutes. I don't know how long this is, but it's probably about 30 minutes. I mean, we can do Hellboy. We can do Dark Knight or something.
We're currently at 52 minutes.
Oh, really? Shit. All right. Let's plan for 30 and go for 52.
When are we ever short, dude? Come on. When are we ever short on content?
I don't know. I'm just saying.
Well, it's still shorter than a regular episode. We'll give it that much.
Yeah. So let's plan on doing this for Wanted and Hellboy. And, we can do it on Dark Knight. I don't know if you want to do a full episode on that. But just like the smaller ones, because you know that CGS and Raging Bulls are going to do Dark Knight. But we don't know if they're going to do Hellboy or Wanted yet, you know?
Right.
So let's do it for those again.
Well, yeah. No,
because I'm going to go see them, and I know you will.
Ooh, actually, why don't we think of this? And, this is just something I'm throwing out there, and we're literally just, bullshitting right now, wasting even more time. But how about a Bat movie retrospective?
Ooh, that might be good.
Because we've never talked about the early ones. I mean, we've talked about them in passing on, like, the movie episode, just a straight-up movie episode we did, but... maybe it's time to go Bat movie by Bat movie by Bat movie.
Okay, let's do that.
Sweet.
In celebration.
Yeah, and we'll hopefully get some good guests on that one. But that one's just in the planning stages right now. But
because we just came up with it.
Yeah, exactly. It's good when I actually think of things.
All right. Cool.
All right. So we're done. You want to put credits on this or not?
This is it for BK's Bullets, and since there are no credits on BK's Bullets, we're just going to say see you later.
And email us at comictiming@gmail.com.
you suck. All right. Thanks a lot for listening, everyone.
There's always time for comics.
Well, there's always time for comics. We'll see you later. Bye.